Just a note about the Lucan writing. Luke is the only one who wrote two volumes, the Gospel and the Book of Acts. And I'm going into this because I think it's helpful for you to know when you read these Gospels, they were written by three different men in three different places at three different times, the Synoptic Gospels. And Luke had this view, I don't know where he got it from, that everything was predestined. Jesus was predestined to go from Galilee to Jerusalem to die, and everything was all laid out prior to anything happening. Well, that's all right. I don't think it's accurate, but that's all right. Luke was happy with it, so why should we complain? Okay. The Gospel of John ends with the 20th chapter. The 21st chapter, the one I just read, was added later. We don't know who added it, but we know that the Gospel of John was edited a whole bunch of times. Some people think as many as six different times people messed over the text. It's very late, it's first century. And we have to ask why, then, this particular passage. By this time, Peter had assumed a more and more prominent place in this Jesus movement. And so John added, or whoever wrote this, added his bit by highlighting Peter with this dialogue between Peter and Jesus. Peter, as you know, had denied Jesus three times in the trial. And so it sounded like Jesus was getting his own back, but let us assume it was fairly gently done. But again, it shows the prominence that Peter came to assume in the early Jesus movement. So we can see here a pattern for the exercise of authority in the church, what came to be called a church. Tend my sheep, feed my lambs. Doesn't say dominate them. You don't feed people with a bunch of laws. You feed people by attending to their needs, seeing where they are in their lives, and then ministering to that need so far as you can understand it. Which is really important because everybody is aware, I suspect, if nothing else, the present Pope is highlighting the difference between his style of leadership and that of the German and the Polish guy ahead of him. And Pius XII too. And John the 23rd was this massive exception. See everything, correct a little. That's what his view of the working of the Vatican was. Know everything that's going on, but don't mess around too much with what's going on. In other words, don't interfere. Don't throw your weight around with these people. And this is extraordinarily important because if you look at the history of the papacy as it developed, and we can give all kinds of historical reasons, this was with the Middle Ages where authority was always invested in a king or an emperor, blah, 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 blah. The church was supposed to be different from all those patterns of authority. And here we have in the early first century how it was to be different. You tend to the sheep and nourish the lambs, and you don't do it by laying down laws. Nobody was ever converted to Christianity by reading the Code of Canon Law, all 2,000 canons. Believe me, I've done it, unfortunately. We had to. But we have legalized the church and made accommodation of those laws the norm for orthodoxy, for really belonging in the church. So we have Francis now. Radically different. That's not an excessive way of describing it either. Radically different from his predecessors. And although I've not seen this document that's been in the news, after the second session of the Synod on the Family, finishes here, Francis has issued this letter, which he said he was going to do after the Synod ended its second session, in which he advises what? Mercy! Mercy! You sit and hear the confessions of people who've been married and divorced and then remarried. And of course, those people are pariahs or have been seen to be pariahs in the church. Francis is saying, cut that out! That's not feeding or tending to anybody, except maybe our own sense of power. And he revived something that's supposed to be classic Catholic theology, which in 8.5 years at 3 different seminaries I never heard, namely the primacy of conscience. I've quoted him many times, Cardinal Newman, convert from Anglicanism. He was made a cardinal at the same time another Anglican convert named Manning was. So he and Manning, they were both cardinals at this point. He and Manning were at a party. So Manning stood up and said, gentlemen, I give you the Pope. Newman stood up and said, yes, the Pope, but to conscience first. And that's the way it's supposed to be. Conscience is the interior voice of God, at least that's a classical teaching, telling us, even if it goes athwart the law. Feed my sheep. Don't strangle them. Don't give them hardtack for nourishment. Feed them. Help them to grow, to prosper. And you don't do that by beating people around the head. My ordaining bishop when I was still in Illinois had this pattern, which I didn't know of till I was involved. A woman came to me in my first parish and said, Father, my husband beats me every day, every day. Beats me. So I said, I'll write the bishop for an annulment. I wrote the bishop. And I got back what was turned out to be a form letter. This is the bishop's response to all of these problems in the family. I cannot at this time bring myself to declare an annulment, so we advise her to pray more. Imagine being told that by the shepherd, the chief shepherd of the diocese. That's what I mean by distortion of power. And everybody in this room knows that that's not an anomaly. That's not an anomalous case. With every bishop I've lived with in London, that's been the case. Sherlock's last words to me after 17 very difficult years trying to live together with, are you undermining my authority in that community? Think about that. He didn't know beans about me except what was related to him by some discontented seminarians. But that was the only question he was interested in asking. Are you a good pastor? Do you counsel well? Do you love these kids whom you see? That was not an issue. There is no other issue. Peter, do you love me? And that love is supposed to be transferred to all your relationships. So, yeah, there is a Petrine ministry. There's no question about that in the scriptures. But what shape does it take? That's the question. If you remember, the Polish Pope actually sent out a letter asking him, how should a Pope operate in the 20th century? He actually asked that. And one of the most dictatorial figures that's ever sat on the throne of Peter. But he asked the question. I think he was serious. You know how many people answered him? Zero. Zero. What does that say? So, I hope that document from the Pope is translated into English soon, where he talks about the primacy of conscience, where he talks about confessors being merciful. Like, what should I have told that woman who is battered every day? Stick with it, honey. Swallow it. Live with it. That's brutal. That's brutalizing. That's not pastoral ministry. That's violence. So this reading, however innocuous it seems, is really, really important. And I'd love to be in cathedrals today to hear bishops commenting on it. Because we have this terrible and very long history of autocratic prince bishops, they used to be called. They're not princes. They ought, like Francis, to smell like the sheep. That's a wonderful, wonderful metaphor. The Pope should smell like the sheep. Which means you have to live with the sheep. You have to listen to the sheep. You have to be part of the sheep's life. Meanwhile, we had the German Pope going back into the Vatican closet and digging out this bejeweled vestments that the Borgia Pope had left in the papal closet. Think about it. I'm not making any of this up, believe me. None of it. So we need to pray that bishops sharpen their hearing.